Shalom. Welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, I want to speak about the beheading in London from a different vantage point. But first, I just want to say that today, being Sunday, May 26th, today, Sunday, May 26th, was a frustrating day for me because I have two great videos that I very much wanted to upload this morning, one in Hebrew and one in English. The English video was one that Shlomo just did about the Obama scandals. I have two really great videos, and I really wanted to upload them, and I really wanted to start moving with these videos and starting our week with two great videos. Unfortunately, there were technical glitches on YouTube, which is something that happens from time to time. YouTube occasionally has technical issues. It doesn't happen that frequently, but when it happens, it sometimes takes several hours. Sometimes it takes a day for them to correct. So I don't know what's going on there, but hopefully by tomorrow morning it'll be corrected. I don't know. I hope so. In any event, what was happening on YouTube was that you couldn't do the like, favorite, and comment functions. You couldn't perform those functions on YouTube. You could see the videos, but you can't like, favorite, and comment on them. And it wasn't only, of course, I checked with other people. They also were experiencing these problems. It wasn't only on my computer. And the problem is, if you can't like, favorite, and comment, that we would have fewer likes, favorites, and comments, that means. And if we had fewer likes, favorites, and comments on the videos, that means we would have less of a good position in the YouTube search engine and in the Facebook search engine. So I had to put off uploading the videos, and you know, I very much wanted to upload them. Unfortunately, it's going to have to be put off probably until tomorrow morning. So I was a little frustrated because I kept checking back. During the day and during this evening to see if the problem had been fully corrected. As of now, on my Internet Explorer browser, the problem has been corrected, but on my Firefox browser, I still see the problem. So I'm not sure it's been fully corrected yet. I don't think it's been fully corrected. So I'll probably have to wait till tomorrow to put up the videos. But they're really great videos. In fact, we have a number of great videos that we're waiting to put up. And it's something that we really look forward to. We're continuing a big Hebrew video campaign to wake the people of Israel up. And of course, we're going to begin now a big English video campaign, God willing, dealing with the Obama scandals and dealing with everything that's happening in regard to the Obama administration, which we're going to try to use to expose the truth and to wake the American people up and to wake everybody up about what's happening in the world. Hopefully this gives us an opportunity to wake people up. Speaking about waking people up, I want to speak about the beheading in London. As tragic and horrible an atrocity that it was, I mean, it was a horrible, tragic action where Muslims, black Muslim beasts, attacked a British soldier in the streets of London, in the open daytime in the streets of London, with 20 bystanders watching. They murdered a British soldier and beheaded him and brutally cut him to pieces and beheaded him. This horrifying incident is another example of why JTF has to be a mass movement. Because if JTF had been a mass movement in the past several days when this incident occurred, this would have given us another opportunity to expose what Islam is really all about. Despite the horror of this incident, no one is going after Islam and exposing what Islam is all about. No one. If we were a mass movement, it would be happening. There'd be somebody saying, this is Islam, and we have to take action A, B, and C in order to deal with this. We'd be able to have this incident serve as another example in a long list of examples of why there cannot be coexistence with Islam. It would enable us to wake a lot of people up in the United States, in Europe, in Israel. And we're going to try to do that. Our movement is going to try to do that, but we're not a mass movement. We're going to reach, once again, our limited number of people. I don't know how many thousands of people are going to see our videos and are going to hear this program, hear us expose this. But again, it's pathetic compared to what should be. We should be reaching every person in the Western world with this message. Certainly, we should be reaching every Jew in Israel. And with this incident, we see once again that even when these horrific actions occur, look at what happens. Right away, all the politicians and all the leaders of the Western world and the news media step in to say, this doesn't represent Islam. Islam is really a religion of peace. The British Prime Minister, David Cameron, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, says this has nothing to do with Islam. This in no way represents Islam. His main goal in when he made a speech talking about this incident, dealing with this incident, his main goal was to exonerate Islam and to say, let's not get carried away. The Muslims are still wonderful people. This is so sick and depraved and disgusting. It's beyond all words. This is an incident that should have served as a wake-up call to everyone, everyone with an ounce of sanity anywhere in the Western world. And if JTF were a mass movement, we would reach everybody with sanity with that message. But because we're not, no one got that message across. No one. And by the way, there's a group called the English Defense League, which condemned JTF, by the way. The EDL, it's an anti-Semitic organization in Britain. They threw the great Roberta Moore out of the organization. Roberta Moore had a Jewish division of the EDL. She was thrown out. I don't know if she was thrown out or she quit. I'm not sure if she was thrown out or she quit, but she could not work with them because they're anti-Semites. And they condemned us. They condemned JTF. But they won't say that Islam is a violent terrorist religion. That they won't say. They say that they're only against militant Islam, which means that there's also a moderate Islam, that they're also good Muslims. That's their message. So their message is watered down baloney. And they're a bunch of phonies. No one is telling the real truth to the people of the world. No one. Except for us, but we do it again with our limitations. We don't reach the type of audience that we're supposed to be reaching. We're supposed to be reaching millions of people. We're reaching thousands of people. So that is a terrible, terrible tragedy that no one brings the truth to the people of the world. Only if we were a mass movement could we do this. If I were in the Knesset, by the way, even if I had just one seat in the Knesset, I would be able to reach huge numbers of people with the truth. Because then I would be on Fox, and then I would be on Israeli television in the Knesset debates, and the media would cover everything I say. Millions of people would be exposed to our message. Millions of people would be hearing the uncompromising truth for the first time since the murder of Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha. Millions of people would again be hearing the truth if I were in the Knesset. Or if we had millions of dollars in our budget, either one. If I'm in the Knesset or we have a multi-million dollar budget, those are the things that would give us the power to quickly become a mass movement. Either one of those things. But unfortunately, we don't have those things. I'm not in the Knesset, and the Knesset being the Israeli parliament, and we don't have a multi-million dollar budget. Sad but true. We're going to do everything we can to publicize the truth and to spread the truth anyway and to reach as many people as we can. And we have an obligation to do this. We are not allowed to be silent. Even if we only reach thousands of people, we've got to reach those thousands of people. We can't give up on what we're doing. We've got to reach as many people as we can and try to build things up as much as we can. That's our obligation. That's our moral obligation, our God-given obligation. But the fact that we can't reach more and the fact that we can't do more is a terrible tragedy. It's a tragedy for Israel. It's a tragedy for America. It's a tragedy for the world. And that's why Islam and the Muslim terrorists get away with what they get away with. And that's why so many terrible things happen in the world. Because there's no voice of pure, uncompromising, common sense truth. We don't have that. We don't have real truth on all fronts We don't have that. And that is what is sorely lacking in the world today, in this generation. And it's something that will only come if we catch a break, and if somehow I manage to get into Israel and get into the Knesset, or if we have a multi-million dollar budget. Those are the only ways this is going to happen, that our dream is going to come true and we're going to be able to bring truth to the people of the world. That's the only way we can do that. If we bring truth and expose the truth to huge numbers of people, we will change history. This will be a different world. I don't know if we'll be able to prevent every tragedy. I don't know if we're going to be able to prevent every tragedy from happening. There'll still be tragedies. But we will at least have people who will be aware and their eyes will be opened, and there will be a hope and a chance of reversing this, and we'll be on the road to correcting the problems of the world if we finally have a movement that stands with principles and stands for what's right. That's what we have to aspire to do. We reach, of course, thousands of Israeli Jews with our videos, with our message of truth. Baruch Hashem, thousands of Israeli Jews see our videos, have seen our videos. But again, it's not enough. We want to reach them regularly on a continuous basis, huge numbers of Israeli Jews. That's the only way we're really going to change history. And again, that's something that could only happen if I were in the Knesset, or someone from our movement is in the Knesset, either myself or someone from our movement is in the Knesset, or if we have the multi-million dollar budget, one of the two. If we have both, of course, both the multi-million dollar budget and someone from our movement is in the Knesset, then we're really presented with an opportunity to make this a better world, to do good things for the world and to make this a better world. And this is just, you know, this incident, this horrible incident of the beheading in London is just example 1 million. It's the 1 millionth example of all of the lost chances that we had to finally tell the truth to the people of the world and finally wake people up. From 9/11 and even before 9/11, all the terrible tragedies, all the statements that have been made by Muslim terrorists, all of their actions, all of the threats that come from the Muslim world, the horrible reality of the strangulation of Western economies because of dependence on Muslim oil. All of these issues have never been fully and properly exposed. Never. No one tells the truth. No one tells the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And because of that, we face such tragic consequences. It's unfortunate, but again, our hope is not yet lost. We're going to continue to reach as many people as we can. Someday, mark my words. Now, I don't know if I'm going to even be alive to see it. I don't know how long it's going to take, and I don't know when. But someday, mark my words, our message and our ideology, which is the Torah biblical ideology, that will rule in Israel, and eventually will rule the whole world. Will eventually be ruled by that ideology. That eventually will come. Someday the good guys are going to win. Someday there will be justice and righteousness. That will happen someday. We know that from all the Nevi'im, all the prophets in the Bible. This is a promise that Hashem, that God has made to the world. Someday that's coming. How it's going to come and when it's going to come, I can't tell you because unfortunately I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you. But there's no doubt that in the end, people who think like us are going to win. I just hope that it doesn't require terrible death and suffering and tragedy, God forbid, before we reach that point. And that we don't have to wait hundreds of years, God forbid, before we reach that point. Because if people behave with wickedness and evil and acts of injustice, that delays the process and that causes tremendous suffering. So that's what we're battling against. We want to bring redemption and truth and justice and righteousness as quickly as possible to as many people as possible with the change that's necessary coming as quickly as possible. That's our objective, so that we could avoid death and tragedy and catastrophes and terrible suffering, needless suffering. That's what we want. That's what we aspire to do. Whether it'll come, whether people like us will be in power in 5 years or in 100 years, I don't know. But someday it's coming. And we are obligated. We are obligated to do everything we can to work for that goal and reach people and wake as many people up all the time. That's why we're in this world. That's our number one purpose in this world. Aside from the fact that we have to have families and have children, we have to care for our own families and our own children. That absolutely, that's a tremendous obligation. But in addition to that, we've got to work to make this a better world. That's our obligation, to stand up for truth and principles and righteousness. That's the other reason we're in the world. One reason is because of our families, our immediate families and friends and our immediate surroundings. We have to work to help as much as possible and to build up as much as possible, build up our families and build up our communities. But we also have to be concerned about the world, about Israel, and about the righteous people throughout the world in general. And of course, when we say be concerned about the world, we're concerned about the righteous people in the world. Anyway, because I know that you, our great JTFers, understand how important it is that this message get across, again, I urge you to help us. When we have Hebrew and English videos, help us promote those videos on Facebook and on YouTube. Like, favorite, comment, share, and mirror the videos so that we get as many views and reach as many people as possible. Very important. And secondly, help us on our forums, on our English forum, if you speak Hebrew, on our Hebrew forum. Help us on our forums, help us on our Facebook pages so that we can reach people through the forums and through the Facebook pages. We need good threads. We need good subject matter. We need good posts. We need to make the forums and the Facebook pages places where people feel welcome and want to be active. And last but not least, we need your financial support, of course. That's our biggest obstacle, our biggest hurdle, is our pathetic budget, our puny budget, which we do miraculous things with, but still, you know, there's only so much you can do with a pathetic, puny budget. And so we need your help. We need checks, money orders, and cash donations for our post office, to our post office box. We have great JTFers who, Baruch Hashem, thank God, generously support us on a regular basis. They send checks, money orders, cash donations to the post office box through the regular mail. God bless you. God bless your families, both in this world and in the next. You're doing something very important. Every contribution makes a big difference. And the great JTFers who help us with their credit cards by going to JTF.org, our English main page, or to Hayamin.org, the Hebrew main page, and click on the donate button on top. And very conveniently with their credit cards, they help us. God bless you. God bless your families, both in this world and in the next. Okay, now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with the great Pyramid Head fan who writes, and I quote, "What is the reason behind Singapore's low crime rate?" Unquote. Well, first of all, a little background. Singapore is a small country of about 5 million residents, a little bit over 5 million residents. About 75% of their residents are Chinese. The country is overwhelmingly Buddhist and Confucian Buddhist and other Asian religions, but they're surrounded by Muslim countries. They're surrounded by Muslim. They're surrounded by Muslim Malaysia, which has 28 million people. By Indonesia, which is a much bigger country. Indonesia is a really big country. It's the largest Muslim population. It's the largest Muslim country in the world. So they're surrounded by Muslim nations. This tiny nation of 5 million residents called Singapore. They're hardworking people, and they have a low crime rate because they have discipline and a sense of community, and they work hard. And they maintain their independence despite the fact that they're facing threats on their border from the Muslim countries that surround them. But thankfully, they're hardworking, disciplined people, and so they're able to have a low crime rate, they're able to have a productive economy, they're able to function as a productive society. If people are disciplined and have good family life and family values, that's what's going to happen. That's going to be the result. Thank you, Pyramid Head Fan. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion of Mark Levin, have you ever met him?" Unquote. I've never met Mark Levin. Sometimes I like what he says on the radio, but he did a couple of things which really turned me off. One of the things that he did that really turned me off, someone called him, one of our people actually, one of our great JTFers, called him and asked him about freeing Jonathan Pollard. And he said, that's a decision the president has to make. I mean, what a wimp. What a wimp. This is a guy with millions of listeners who has a secure spot on the radio. They're not going to take him off. He has great ratings. He's making a lot of money. If he had said, what, he's too wimpy and afraid to stand up for this Jew, this Jewish hero, Jonathan Pollard, who has given his life for the Jewish people. I mean, Jonathan Pollard has been in prison now for 28 years. And Mark Levin can't stand up and say, I want him freed, that he should be freed. You have Mike Huckabee, a Gentile, a Christian, a Baptist minister, a Gentile who ran for president, who has been saying for years now that Jonathan Pollard should be freed. And other great people, some righteous Gentiles and righteous Jews, have called for freeing Pollard. Even some people who aren't righteous already are calling for freeing him. This is such an injustice. But Mark Levin is too wimpy and too cowardly to come out even for freeing Jonathan Pollard. He's so self-conscious and so worried that someone's going to say, oh, you're a Jew and you're helping a Jew. Oh, look at you. You're not loyal to America. Anyone who doesn't want Jonathan Pollard freed is disloyal to America. Because what Jonathan Pollard did was essential not only for Israel and the Jewish people, but essential for America. So I was completely turned off by that with Mark Levin. And that really, to me, that really spoke volumes about what he really represents. I'm not sure, by the way, if he's married to a Jewish woman. That's another issue. I mean, his wife does not have a Jewish-sounding name at all. So I'm not sure about that. Then he would really be a terrible example for the Jewish people if he intermarried as well. That may also be an issue. So, you know, I'm not happy with him. I demand loyalty to principles from people on the radio and elsewhere. I demand that when someone has been unjustly thrown in prison for 28 years, that anyone with an ounce of decency would speak up and say he should be freed. And if someone's not willing to do that, as far as I'm concerned, they're not a good person. And now, the great Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "How do your views differ from Noam Federman?" Unquote. My views don't differ from Noam Federman. I think we agree probably on 95% of the issues. Noam Federman is a Jewish hero. He's a great Jew. We have supported him over the years extensively. We've helped him financially as well over the years. We haven't been in touch with him recently for a number of reasons, but for years we supported him and his family, and we're very proud that we supported him and his family. He is a Jewish hero, and we agree with him. We agree with him on 95% of the issues. We don't agree with anybody. You know, I don't agree with anybody on 100% of the issues. Even within JTF, nobody agrees with each other 100%. We're not robots. We're all human beings, and we all have our own personalities and our own views, and there may be differences of opinion here and there. But we're on almost all the issues. I think we do agree. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim. Are you going to go back and do JTF shows on QPTV again? I miss those shows. I used to intern there," unquote. No, we're not going to be doing that, Joe, because we're so busy with the internet and what we're doing with the internet that we just can't. I love doing the shows, the local cable TV shows. I love doing those local cable TV shows. And yes, we did have a big audience. But the internet is the name of the game. That is the future. And I just physically don't have the time and cannot do both that and the other things we're doing. I can't. I absolutely can't. I do not have the time to do it. I just can't do it anymore. It's very, very time consuming. It's very, very time consuming to have a show on cable TV. It's not just taping the show. It's the paperwork. It's going there. It's applying. It's getting, it's bringing the shows there all the time, making sure they're in the right time slot. It's very time consuming. You have to get special tapes. QPTV makes you get all types of special tapes and special equipment. And it's just, they have their own little procedures. It's very time, every little thing adds up. And in the end, you know, it would take up a huge portion of my week doing the shows. I just can't afford to do that. I can't. As much as I love speaking to people locally in Queens, my goal, if we're going to really make a difference, because we had shows, we had the local shows for 20 years. My goal is that we're going to eventually be in the Knesset, that we're eventually going to go big time. We can't do that if all of my time is consumed by a local cable TV show. As much as I like doing it, as much I love doing it, and as much as it did help the movement, and a lot of people learned a lot from it. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our good friend Eli Yitzchaki, who is from Israel and is also active on the Hebrew Forum. Eli Yitzchaki writes, and I quote, "What do you think about Yair Lapid's recent interview to the New York Times?" Unquote. Well, I think, Eli, as you know, I don't like Yair Lapid. And his interview to the New York Nazi Times, people said it was that he moved to the right because he said he didn't want to freeze Jewish settlements. Big deal. I mean, big deal. I wasn't impressed. I mean, I wasn't impressed. I don't think, you know, he said he was also against dividing Jerusalem. Meantime, he supports the creation of a Palestine state. He supports the expulsion of Jews, of a good 100,000 Jews who are on the wrong side of the fence in Judea and Samaria. That's his position. I mean, the position of Yair Lapid, Netanyahu, Lieberman, these other people, Lieberman is even worse. Let's take Lieberman out of that for now. Lieberman would actually give up Jerusalem as well. But Yair Lapid, Bibi Netanyahu, most of the Likudniks, most of these people, and Yair Lapid is not from the Likud, he's from a different party that he formed called Yesh Atid, which means there is a future. These individuals, in the end, would accept a Palestine state, would accept the surrender of 97%, 97% of Judea and Samaria, chas v'chalila, God forbid. They would accept the expulsion of about 100,000 Jews who live on the wrong side of the fence. There's a fence that's being built, or a wall that's being built, separating Jews from certain blocks and communities. What they're going to try to do is, what they want to do is they want to have what they call settlement blocks. In other words, there are most of the Jews in Judea and Samaria live in just 2 or 3% of Judea and Samaria. There's 2 or 3% that's right along the border, clusters that's right along the border of big settlements. Those settlements would probably remain in Israel's hands. And then there's a wall that's being built around those settlements, and on the other side of the wall, you have about 100,000 Jews who live in the rest of Judea and Samaria. The other 100,000 Jews in the rest of Judea and Samaria would be expelled under this plan, God forbid. And that means Israel would give up 97% of Judea and Samaria. Plus, Israel would give up land within pre-67 Israel to make up for the 2 or 3% of Judea and Samaria that they're not surrendering. They'd also have to surrender part of pre-1967 Israel, probably land in the Negev. And so Israel would go back essentially to the pre-1967 borders that are only 6 to 9 miles wide. Complete national suicide. Yair Lapid has expressed support for this concept. He says he favors what he calls the two-state solution, which is really not a two-state solution because the Arabs already have 66 countries, so it's really a 67-state solution. But Yair Lapid has said that he supports this concept. And so that means he's bad. Netanyahu has also come out in favor of a so-called Palestine state. And that means that he's also bad. Eli now asks, and I quote, and what do you think are Hillary Clinton's chances of winning in 2016, unquote. I think she has a good chance of winning. Despite the scandals, despite everything, I think she has a good chance of winning. Her husband faced numerous scandals in 1992 and in 1996, and he was elected twice. He was elected and reelected. So I think she has a good chance. And I think she would be an absolutely disastrous president. Thank you, Ellie. And now we move on to the great Obama is trash, who writes, and I quote, Ukrainian Nazi collaborator Yaroslav Tsetsko, who advocated extermination of Jews, has statues named after him all over Ukraine. Please curse Ukrainians, unquote. You're absolutely right. Yaroslav Tsetsko actually became the, you know, he was the Ukrainian leader and became the leader of the Ukraine when it was fighting together with Nazi Germany. And they did exterminate, under his leadership, the Ukrainian Nazis, Yimach Shmam V'Zichram Shem Reshem Birkav, exterminated hundreds of thousands of Jews during the Holocaust. What you're referring to when you say he advocated extermination of Jews, he openly wrote in his biography, in his autobiography, openly wrote that the Jews should be exterminated, that he agrees with the final solution of Hitler and the Nazis. And the Ukrainian Nazis brutally murdered hundreds of thousands of Jews. In Babi Yar, they took the Jews and threw them in a mass grave. They made the Jews dig their own graves, threw them in a mass grave, and then buried them alive. They buried tens of thousands of Jews alive. And the soil was moving, and the Jews were struggling as they were breathing their last breath. And there are horrifying descriptions of what happened. That was Babi Yar, and that was done by Ukrainian Nazis. The Ukrainians supported Nazi Germany and were vicious, monstrous Nazi Jew killers. And the fact that they're naming statues all over the Ukraine for him now is not surprising at all, because they've never changed. They were Nazis, they still are Nazis. Thank you, Obama's trash. And now, our good friend Binyamin Yisrael writes, and I quote, what should the U.S. have done in 1990 when Iraq invaded Kuwait? Why save one Muslim country from another? Unquote. Okay, let's start with that. The U.S. should have done nothing. The U.S. should have had a crash program for energy independence so that the United States and the Western world would not be vulnerable to cutoffs in oil. But when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and took over Kuwait, so what? Who cares? I mean, if they want to have sanctions against Iraq, that would have been good. Sanctions are good, economic sanctions. But going in and intervening to save Kuwaiti sheiks, oil sheiks, so that they could be multi-billionaires and rip off the American people and rip off all Western countries and the whole Western world with their oil thievery, that was crazy. That did not accomplish anything. That was not good for the world. And again, when you're absolutely right. When Muslims fight other Muslims, when Muslims make war against other Muslims, why should we intervene to stop it? This is good when Muslims are fighting each other. Let them fight each other instead of attacking Western countries. Binyamin Yisrael now writes, and I quote, what if Israel had struck back at Iraq? Unquote. Well, what Binyamin is referring to, Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi dictator, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, during the Persian Gulf War in 1991, Saddam Hussein fired Scud missiles into Israel. And everybody assumed that Israel's going to strike back, because Israel still had that reputation that Israel, oh, the minute you start with Israel, they strike back. That was the reputation that Israel had, even though it's not true. It never has been true. But that was Israel's reputation. And I remember I was in Texas at the time. I was in prison in Texas. And everybody in prison, blacks, whites, Christians, Muslims, were all saying, oh, boy, Saddam Hussein shouldn't have started with Israel. Israel's really going to give it to him now. That's one country you don't start with. That was the reputation of Israel. But when Yitzhak Shamir, who's a pathetic prime minister, a terrible prime minister, when Yitzhak Shamir did not strike back, even though 37 Scud missiles were fired on Israel, that really, really gave Israel a terrible reputation. And it was one of the signals to the Muslim world and to the whole world that you can kick Israel around, and that Israel is not the brave, noble country that it's supposed to be. So it was terrible. Israel should have struck back. Whenever Israel is under attack, Israel should strike back and strike back ferociously. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to Kyle, our good friend Kyle, who writes, and I quote, "What are your thoughts on Moshe Dayan?" Unquote. Moshe Dayan was, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, was an unbelievably evil, monstrous leader. He was the defense minister of Israel. First of all, he was chief of staff, in effect, during the 1967 Six-Day War, because Yitzhak Rabin had a nervous breakdown. Yitzhak Rabin was a drunk, and he had a nervous breakdown. He was supposed to be chief of staff of Israel's military, but he wound up having a nervous breakdown. Anyway, Moshe Dayan took over, and after that became defense minister of Israel, later, after the war. But one of the things that he did during the war, he did a number of things in the war that really, I'm going to give you two examples of things which show how much damage this piece of garbage, this vicious enemy of the Jewish people, did to the Jewish people. Just two examples of the damage that he did. Number one, during the war itself, when Israel was liberating, and this is the 1967 Six-Day War now, Israel was liberating Judea and Samaria. Tens of thousands of Arabs started to flee, started to run to the border. They were afraid that Israel was going to avenge all the murder of Jews that they were responsible for, because in Hebron, for instance, which is the city of our fathers, 69 Jews were murdered in 1929. In 1929, the Arab Muslim Nazis in Hebron slaughtered, brutally, savagely slaughtered 69 innocent, unarmed Jews who were their neighbors, their friends, their lifelong friends and neighbors, and the Muslim population turned on the Jews and slaughtered 69 innocent Jews. This was in 1929. So the Jewish community in Hebron fled, and there was no longer any Jewish community there since 1929. In 1967, when Israel was about to liberate Hebron, all the Arabs in Hebron picked up and started running toward the Jordanian border. They wanted to escape. They figured that the Jews are going to get revenge, because they thought the Jews are normal. So they were all terrified. They were all running. Tens of thousands of Arabs were fleeing. And it could have led to a complete panic. All the Arabs in Judea and Samaria could have fled across the border. Would have been the end of the problem of a huge Arab population in Judea and Samaria. Moshe Dayan put soldiers on the Jordanian-Israeli border and stopped them from crossing the border. Said, no, go back to your homes. We're not going to harm you. Go back to your homes. You have nothing to fear. We're not going to harm you. Moshe Dayan reassured all the Arabs, you have no reason to flee. We're not going to harm you. You can go back to your homes. No one will touch you. At least tens of thousands of Arabs were going to flee Judea and Samaria, and probably hundreds of thousands, because it was a panic was starting to set in. And in the Arab world, when there's panic, everybody starts to run. So we were going to lose hundreds of thousands of Arabs, maybe all of Judea and Samaria in the end. All the Arabs would have fled, or at least almost all of them. Moshe Dayan stopped that. He made sure that we would have a situation where there are huge numbers of Arabs now living in the land of Israel, thanks to him, who were going to flee. So that's one example of the evil. And they were fleeing on their own, by the way. We didn't even have to expel them. We didn't have to do anything. They were just running, fleeing on their own. But he stopped them because he was afraid the world is going to accuse Israel, and he wanted to show how nice they are, as if the world is very impressed with that. The world still accuses Israel of every crime under the sun. We weren't even doing anything. They were fleeing on their own, and he had to stop them. What a criminal. That's number one. I'll give you a second example of what this animal, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, did. After the war, the Jews liberated the Temple Mount. They liberated Har HaBayit, which is the Temple Mount, which is the holiest place in the world. That's where the Holy Temple was. That's the place where you had where people, when they would go in to make the sacrifices, would have a prophetic experience with God. They would come out so peaceful, so elated, so reassured, because they would actually have direct communication with God when they would go into the Holy Temple in those days, in the days of sacrifices, in the days of prophecy. And this unbelievably holy, sacred place for the Jewish people was finally liberated. And the Jews had control over it again. The Waqf, which are the Muslim Nazis that were running the Temple Mount, up until the 67 war, up until the 67 Six-Day War, used the mosque to preach the extermination of Jews, to preach genocide against the Jewish people. Every Arab leader, like Ahmed Shukari, the first head of the PLO, would go there and say, we're going to push the Jews into the sea, we're going to finish Hitler's job. They were making speeches from in the mosque, in those mosques on the Temple Mount, calling for genocide against the Jewish people. So they knew when the Israelis liberated the area and they were under control of the Israeli control, they were terrified. They immediately, nervously brought the keys to the mosques and said, here, here, to Moshe Dayan. They wanted to hand it over to Moshe Dayan and say, here, here, here are the keys. Here are the keys. They're your, it's all yours now. They were terrified. Moshe Dayan handed them back the keys, which they had given on their own. They gave up control. Moshe Dayan handed them back the keys and said, no, 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 you're going to continue to control. You're going, even though we liberated this area, you will continue to, your Nazi group, the Waqf, will continue to control the Temple Mount. You still are the people in control. You will control the Temple Mount. I mean, what an unbelievable Chilul Hashem. What an unbelievable desecration of God's name. But that was Moshe Dayan, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. There are no words to describe the harm that he did to the Jewish people. Now his daughter, Yael Dayan, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, she's a radical left-wing lesbian who dances with the PLO flag. I mean, just unbelievable. What a hideous family, what a hideous group of people. Thank you, Kyle, and great question. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, Chaim HaAmitz, tell us of Marvin Heyer, a.k.a. Lower. Is he worse than Walter Isaacson of Slime Magazine? Unquote. Marvin Heyer, he is as vile as you can get. First of all, Marvin Heyer is the head of the so-called Simon Wiesenthal Center. Simon Wiesenthal was the so-called Nazi hunter who protected Nazi war criminals. He protected Kurt Waldheim. He protected Nazi war criminals so that they would let him operate his office in Vienna. And he literally protected them. And a book was actually written about how he protected the Nazi war criminals, including Kurt Waldheim, and did everything he could to guard over people who were responsible for mass murder during the Holocaust. And he was the so-called Nazi hunter. He's the Nazi hunter. This is the type of farcical lunacy that the Jewish people are subjected to. They allow traitors and scum and the most cowardly cockroaches to pose as their liberators and their leaders, whether it's Moshe Dayan or Marvin Heyer or Simon Wiesenthal. Now, this happens over and over again in Jewish history. David Ben-Gurion, all traitors. And this is why we have so many tragedies. Marvin Heyer is the head of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. In the early 1990s, he raised $50 million to build what he calls the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. What is the Museum of Tolerance? Museum of Tolerance, again, $50 million in the early 1990s. Today, of course, that's much more money. The Museum of Tolerance supports black Jew hate. They've had exhibits supporting black Jew haters, Muslim Nazis, gays, about the terrible persecution of gays. They have exhibits. They've invited, of course, Barack Hussein Obama over to the museum, and Bill and Hillary Clinton, and all the Jew haters come to visit the museum. I mean, just hideous. This is called the Museum of Tolerance. Tolerance, tolerance, please tolerate us, please. That's Marvin Heyer. And now they're building a $100 million new Museum of Tolerance in Jerusalem. They raised another $100 million from six self-hating Jews to build another Museum of Tolerance, this time in Jerusalem, where they're going to promote the gays and the leftists, and Islam is a religion of peace, they say, and the Muslims are really wonderful. That's what they're going to be promoting now in Jerusalem. Can you imagine this? This group, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, on their website, refers to JTF as a hate group. We're listed as one of their hate groups. We're on the list as one of the hate groups. Can you imagine that? In other words, Barack Hussein Osama, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, all their other friends, those aren't haters. And the Muslim Nazis are not haters. They're not haters. No. The PLO and Fatah terrorists, they're not haters. We in JTF are haters. These mass murderers and supporters of Nazism are friends of the Jewish people, supposedly, according to the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which defended, again, Kurt Waldheim, Barack Hussein Obama they defended, Muslims they defend, gays they defend, but JTF they call a hate group. And now, another $100 million for a new Museum of Tolerance in Jerusalem to brainwash Jews once again and teach Jews to be self-hating. That's Marvin Heyer. Yimach Shmo v'zichro. And now Gematria asks, is he worse than Walter Isaacson of Slime Magazine, unquote? Well, Walter Isaacson and Slime Magazine, and of course, Gematria is actually referring to Time Magazine, which we call Slime Magazine. You can't get a magazine more anti-Semitic than Time. Even in the 1967 Six-Day War, when the media was pro-Israel, in those days the media was pro-Israel, because there was still guilt about the Holocaust. It was only 22 years after the Holocaust, and the Arab world was openly saying, we're going to push the Jews into the sea. So in those days, even the media was pro-Israel in those days. Even the vicious Jew-hating media supported Israel in those days, but not Time Magazine. There were certain exceptions. Time Magazine, the New York Nazi Times, the Washington Post, there were certain exceptions in the media who were anti-Israel and anti-Semitic, even in the 1967 Six-Day War when everybody was pro-Israel. Now, of course, everybody is anti-Israel in the media. You know, they've all joined forces against Israel. And Time Magazine more than anyone. And Walter Isaacson, you know, this is just an example of what sick, evil scum you have in the news media. And Gematria writes, what about rabbis for human rights, unquote? Well, obviously they're not rabbis. These scum-of-the-earth Jewish anti-Semites are anti-Israel. But this organization that Gematria is asking me about, so-called Rabbis for Human Rights, is an organization that supports the PLO terrorists, that is against Israel, that condemns everything, every wimpy little thing that Israel does. They right away condemn it. Oh, it's terrible. It's aggression. It's not nice. You're hurting the peace process. You know, just the most vile. They defend every Muslim terrorist, every Muslim scum of the earth animal that wants to destroy Israel. They right away jump in and say, his human rights are being violated. You know, I mean, just the most evil people on the face of the earth. Unbelievably evil. Yimach shmam v'zichram, shem reshaim yirkav, which means may their names and memories be obliterated, and may the name of the rock of the wicked rot. Thank you, Gematria. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, is there a way to find out which parties participate in the banning of Kach? Is there a list available? Can you name them? Thanks. Tag Mechir Tzedek, every single party in the Israeli Knesset in 1988 when Kach was banned, either voted to ban Kach or abstained. They either voted or abstained. No one opposed it. No one stood up and defended Harab Meir Kahana Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. No one. No one defended him. No one opposed it. Not one. Not one. And of course, the people who led it, the two parties that led the effort to ban him, were the Likud, Yitzhak Shamir and the Likud, and a party called Techiah. Techiah was was a party of Geula Kohen. She sponsored the law banning Rabbi Kahana, whose son now is Tzachi Hanegbi, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, another beast who's in the Likud, who's a complete traitor in the Likud, who supported supported the expulsion in Gush Katif, and supports all the surrender of land, supports the so-called Palestine state. Just pure scum. That's her son. And Geula Kohen, she was supposed to be a big right-winger, and the Techiah was supposed to be a right-wing party, and they sponsored the law banning Rabbi Kahana, they and the Likud. So in the end, the phony right were the ones who led the campaign to ban Kach. It was the phony right, because Kach took votes away from them, and so they wanted to ban him even more than the left. That's what happened. Not one party, no one defended him. Either they supported banning him and voted for it, or they abstained, one or the other. But no one stood up for what was right. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to our friend 121, who writes, and I quote, "Are punitive cigarette and alcohol taxes characteristic of patriarchal governance? Should governments take a patriarchal role in what sectors and why?" Unquote. No, I don't think so. I think that it's legitimate to tax cigarettes and alcohol. I think sin taxes, what this is called sin taxes, I think that's legitimate. People, and by the way, it's even in the U.S. Constitution, it happens to be constitutional. Income taxes are unconstitutional. Even though there's a so-called constitutional amendment permitting income taxes, that amendment was not passed properly. It was a farce. But income taxes, that is confiscating people's wealth without giving them any choice, confiscating people's money. That is something that should not be permitted, that we should strive to eliminate. But taxes on commodities, sales taxes and taxes on commodities, that's a legitimate way to raise money for the government. Of course, it can be abused. The government can overdo it. But it is legitimate, and certainly on things as destructive as cigarettes and alcohol, it is appropriate, in my view. Thank you, 121. And the great Da Vinci now writes, and I quote, "According to Wikipedia, George Soros is a philanthropist dedicated to making this a better world. Do you agree with that?" Unquote. I think George Soros is one of the most evil people in the world. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav. I mean, one of the most vicious Jewish anti-Semites. This is a multi-billionaire who spends all of his money on evil. All he does is promote evil. He works to destroy Israel. He promotes every left-wing group that wants to destroy Israel. In America, he works, of course, to promote Obama and promote all the leftists in America. He is the scum of the earth. In fact, I actually have to apologize to scum. It's an insult to scum. The comparison is an insulting comparison. Nothing is as low and vile as this beast, George Soros. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Hopefully he'll drop dead soon. He's in his 80s. I hope he drops dead. Unfortunately, he has children who are just as evil as he is. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, New York State has a very weak economy. What governmental policies do you think would improve the situation?" Unquote. Oh, Kahana loyalists, it's obvious what would improve the situation. But it's not going to happen, because New York is a Bolshevik state. The only thing that would improve the situation for New York State is a drastic cut in spending, in state and local spending. Drastic cuts in state and local spending. Drastic cuts in taxes, including elimination of the state income tax. State income tax should be eliminated. Local income tax, like in New York City, should be eliminated. And with drastically less spending and drastically lower taxes, and with much less bureaucracy and harassment of businesses, New York would be booming. I mean, then New York would be booming. The problem is brutal tax and spending policies. Overspending and overtaxing is the destruction of any economy anywhere, whether it's local or national or international. One of the things that destroys economies is overspending and overtaxing. New York also, of course, would have to take a tough stand on illegal aliens and and a tough stand on the third world invaders that are destroying the state. But New York would be much less attractive to them if New York cut back on its welfare programs and its generous support programs. If New York cut back drastically, those people would flee to other states, which have more generous programs. Right now, New York is one of the most generous places in the world for people that want handouts, for people that are too lazy to work and that want a handout. And so New York attracts the worst type of people. New York causes the best to want to flee and the worst to want to come in. So New York does the opposite of what any sane state would do. The opposite. The good people, they cause to flee because of high taxes, high spending, bureaucracy. They harass small business people. They harass anybody in New York who is honest, decent, works for a living. Some of the highest property taxes in the nation. I mean, it's a nightmare, the property taxes, the sale taxes, the income taxes, state and local income taxes. It's a nightmare. So the good people are harassed out of the state, and the evil people are invited in because they give them all types of government programs. That's New York State. How do you correct that? You do the opposite. You do the opposite. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to our friend Kentanka, who writes, and I quote, "Can you please comment on EU countries' plan to label all things manufactured in some parts of Israel as occupied territories?" Unquote. Well, of course, the European Union, you know, has always been anti-Semitic. I mean, this is the continent that murdered millions of Jews and persecuted the Jews nonstop for 2,000 years. And it's continuing. I mean, we see this continuing behavior. So some of the things that they're going to be boycotting, by the way, I'm actually happy that they're doing it. Because a lot of these businesses and imports, or a lot of these exports from Judea and Samaria, you know who the workers are in these exporting companies? Arabs. They hire Arabs. For most of these companies, the workers are Arabs. So I'm not that upset about this, to tell you the truth. Like, some Israelis are horrified. Oh, it's terrible. Look what's going to happen. Most of the companies that are going to be boycotted, most of their employees are Arab Muslim Nazis. So who cares? I think I boycott them myself. If there's a company that helps Arab Muslim Nazis, I also think they should be boycotted. Of course, the EU wants to do it for anti-Semitic and anti-Israel reasons. But most of the companies involved here are actually bad companies. Now, it's true that also there probably are some good companies and good people in Judea and Samaria who are also going to get hurt by this. That's true. But you got to learn to live independently. Evil people are going to be boycotting Israel. Evil people are going to be doing economic sanctions against Israel. That's a reality we have to learn to live with. And we can live with it, and we can still prosper despite that. Thank you, Kentanka. And now we go to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Is same-sex marriage legal in Israel? And if it is, don't you find it ironic because it violates Orthodox Jewish teachings?" Unquote. No, it's not. Same-sex marriage is not legal in Israel. Thank God, Baruch Hashem. The marriage system is still controlled by the rabbis in Israel. So Israel is actually, on that score, Israel is actually better than the United States. It's one of the things that safeguards Israel against some of the plagues that we have in America. I'm not saying that there aren't terrible things that go on in Israel. There are terrible things, but actually in America and in Europe, it's Western countries in general, it's actually worse than Israel, because in Israel you still have some religious Jewish influence, and the religious Jews still control marriages for the vast majority of Israeli Jews. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our friend EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Months before 9/11/01, three Muslim children from Gaza with heart defects were flown to New York and had life-saving surgery at North Shore LIJ. Your thoughts?" Unquote. Oh, well, you know, I just had a close relative of mine at North Shore LIJ, and I was stunned to see, and I visited him there every day for the 18 days that he was there. He was in the hospital for 18 days, and I visited him every day there. And, you know, it was just unbelievable. The majority of patients there were Muslims, even though it's an excellent hospital. I mean, it happens to be an excellent hospital because you have a lot of brainy Jewish doctors there. The surgeons, the doctors, the administrators are Jews. So they run a very efficient hospital, a very big, clean, well-funded hospital, and the surgeons are some of the best in the country. LIJ, by the way, stands for Long Island Jewish. So the vast majority of the surgeons and there are Jewish. So they, you know, I mean, they have very good surgeons, and it's actually a well-run hospital, usually. But, you know, these self-hating Jews, they always have to invite all of their enemies in. 60 or 70% of the patients that I saw there, and I was there a lot. I was there for 18 days visiting my relative who was there, someone in my family who was sick and who was there for 18 days. I was there every single day, and I saw hundreds of patients there. And I was in several different units with this relative of mine. 60 to 70% of the patients that I saw there were Muslims from every scum of the earth hellhole on the face of the earth. From Pakistan and Afghanistan and Turkey and the Arab countries. I mean, just so disgusting. I mean, there were times when this so-called Jewish hospital looked like a mosque. I'll give you a quick story, EB, which I think I told you at our JTF meeting. But I'll give you this. I want to share this quick story with our listeners here. Yeah, you know, you have two people to a room. You have to share a room. You have two people to a room. So this relative of mine, someone in my family, was in the room, and they bring this Muslim kid in, a 3 or 4 year old Muslim kid. They bring him into the hospital, and he has one of these diseases. I don't know, from one of these horrible countries that he comes from. And he has this disease, and, you know, and he's there, and he's hooked up with IV and tubes and everything else, and they got him all hooked up, and he's in bed. And his parents come over. Okay. Next thing I know, I go out for a while. Next thing I know, I come back. Next thing I know, his parents took him out of the bed when the nurse and the doctors left. His parents took him out of his bed with all the tubes hooked into him. They took him out of his bed and moved him onto the seat. They put him on the seat and put him to sleep on the seat. They had him sleeping on the seat instead of in his bed. And the two parents got into his bed and went to sleep in his bed. Did you ever hear? I mean, this, it's unbelievable. I mean, this is just not civilized. These are not civilized human beings. They move their own kid out of the bed, who's hooked up with all these wire, with all these tubes, and they got into his bed and started sleeping in his bed and turned his bed into their little hotel room. And this went on for hours. I don't know I wasn't there. I don't know who finally told them to get out of bed. But for several hours, I saw them sleeping in the bed. And nurses came by and didn't say anything. What the hell is this? The parents are sleeping in the bed and they put their kid on the seat next to the bed with all the tubes and everything still hooked into him, a 3 or 4 year old kid. And the two parents are sleeping in the bed, like, and turn it into a hotel room. I mean, this is just, it's beyond belief. And I could tell you so many other stories that I saw during that 18 days there. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, but that's what happens when you have the UJA and the self-hating Jews controlling things. Those are the tragic consequences of that. Thank you, EB. And now, let me just check something here quickly. Okay. And now we go to Paper Cut. And Paper Cut writes, and I quote, Chaim, is it wrong to want the Dome of the Rock Mosque blown up and Muslim mosques in the U.S. like the Victory Mosque in New York City blown up or torn down, unquote? No, I mean, when you say blown up, of course, we mean legally. You mean that we would get that you would have people legally a court order and it would legally be demolished. We don't mean, of course, we don't mean somebody coming in the middle of the night and bombing the mosques. We, of course, don't advocate anything illegal on this program, as you know, and our organization doesn't advocate anything illegal. But wanting to see the mosques removed? Absolutely. Absolutely. If we take over if I ever become prime minister, God willing, and we ever take over, we're going to remove those mosques on the Temple Mount. They are going. We are going to remove them. That's going to happen. Bezrat Hashem, God willing. And as far as Muslim mosques in the U.S., like the Victory Mosque in New York City, of course they shouldn't exist. Absolutely shouldn't exist. You know, there's a mosque in my neighborhood, and it is so smelly. I mean, they put their garbage out, and it is so smelly and nasty. I have never seen anything like this. It's not even a big mosque, even though they're building lots of mosques. I mean, I live in Queens. Huge numbers of Muslims are moving into Queens. Huge numbers in every neighborhood. And you have a mosque there, and they have so much garbage, and it is so smelly. I mean, you have to hold your nose a block away when you pass that mosque. It's the nastiest place I've ever seen. Just nasty. Should these places be removed? Of course they should be. Absolutely. If America and Israel and Western countries were sane, they would be. Thank you, Papercut. And now we go to Mohammed is a gay prostitute in hell, who is one of our great members, who writes, and I quote, "One, please comment on the beheading of a soldier by two Muslims in London," unquote. Mohammed is a gay prostitute in hell. I actually did my opening on this subject. So I actually already commented on this on my opening. But you do ask a second question here. Two, many politicians are openly speaking of a coming civil war in the UK, unquote. I hope so. We should be so lucky. I would hope that there are enough people that would be willing to fight for their country. See, my belief is that that's not going to happen. Unless something surprising happens. Right now, I don't think we're headed toward that. Right now, I think people are passively allowing their countries to be taken over. I think they're passively permitting all of this. I don't see people resisting the insanity that's happening in Britain, in America, in France, and all these other countries. I don't see people resisting. I don't see it. Now, if we became a mass movement, who knows? I don't think you need a civil war. I don't think you need a civil war. I think that the majority of people in Western countries are not Muslim, and they could take action now without the need for a civil war. I think that they could remove the Arab terrorist threat without a civil war. But the possibility of very violent rioting and other types of violence, that possibility certainly exists. And I see maybe a one-sided civil war, but I don't see the other side responding. I don't see people rising up against this atrocious behavior that's taking place in Western countries. I don't see it. Again, that's one of the reasons why I wish we were a mass movement. And again, we wouldn't advocate a civil war, we wouldn't advocate anything illegal, but we would advocate taking legal action, to remove Muslim terrorist threats once and for all. Thank you, Mohammed is a gay prostitute. And now we go to our good friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, should Israel ever have any relations with Germany," unquote. I don't think so. Even though there are some Germans who are not terrible people, and we actually have some righteous people from Germany on our website, but as a whole, the German people have not changed. The German people murdered over 6 million innocent Jews during the Holocaust, and since then, they and their leaders have done everything possible to get Israel to commit suicide and to bring about another Holocaust. Now, considering Germany's history, they especially should be refusing to take part in any pressure on Israel. And instead of doing that, Germany leads the way with the European Union funding Peace Now and funding every radical left organization and condemning everything Israel does. Germany is the leading force in the European Union. So nothing has changed. They themselves don't want to open concentration camps. They themselves are not planning to get their hands dirty and open the concentration camps and murder millions of people like they did 70 years ago. They're not planning to do that. But they want to help the Arab Muslim Nazis finish the job. And I think after what they did during the Holocaust and the fact that they've continued with these types of policies, I don't think Israel should have relations with them, no. Thank you, Maimonides, and I don't think Jews should have anything to do with them. And again, the only exception I'd make, there are a handful of decent people. You know, there always are a handful of decent people in every country, and we see a couple of them even on our own forum. And if there are decent people, we have nothing against individuals who are decent exceptions to the rule. And now we go to the great Gam Bashan v'Gam Gilad, who, of course, Gam Bashan is from Israel, and he's very active on our Hebrew forum, and he's also active in our English forum. Gam Bashan writes, and I quote, "Hello, dear Chaim. Just wanted to say in favor of each one of us how badly we love and cherish and wait for these shows every week. Thank you, Chaim," unquote. Thank you so much, Gam Bashan. Kodem kol, Baruch Hashav. Ve'ani modeh lecha meod, she'akadosh baruch hu yishmor alecha, she'akadosh baruch hu yevarech otcha. Thank you so much, Gam Bashan. And now we go to Waiting for the Mother Plane to Come, who is, of course, one of our great JTFers of all time. Waiting for the Mother Plane writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, someday isn't it possible Jewish American Heritage Month will celebrate you, Harav Zatzal, and Jonathan Pollard," unquote. Well, I do believe the day is going to come when, I don't know, Jewish Heritage, you know, Jewish American Heritage Month, I don't think there's going to be a Jewish American Heritage Month when this time comes. When people are ready to celebrate Rabbi Kahana and his followers, there won't be a Jewish American Heritage Month anymore because Jews, the good Jews, will all be in Israel. And you may have righteous Gentiles in America who will want to celebrate these things, who want to celebrate Rabbi Kahana and his teachings, because Rabbi Kahana was also, of course, a hero for the righteous Gentiles. Rabbi Kahana addressed the whole world. Rabbi Kahana was someone who addressed the whole world with his great message. I do think the day is going to come. You're making a very good point here, Waiting for the Mother Plane. The day is going to come when the righteous who are persecuted in this generation are going to be seen as the few voices that spoke the truth. That day will eventually come. No doubt about that. Thank you, Waiting for the Mother Plane. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what's the deal with the medical device tax? Is it because liberals are against almost everyone having high-paid jobs?" Unquote. Well, liberals may say they're against people having high-paid jobs, even though many of them, the ones in the elite, they have high-paid jobs. They're hypocrites. They're hypocrites and phonies. And, you know, they're choking massive taxation is just part of their hypocrisy and part of the insanity of what they create. We pay taxes on everything that moves and things that don't move. And it's absolutely destructive in every respect. It's destructive economically. It's destructive socially. It's destructive morally. This massive taxation is very, very negative for the future of society. It is a crime for the elitists in the government and the elitists in the bureaucracies and the labor unions to steal people's hard-earned money through massive taxation. This is a crime. People have a right to keep their hard-earned money. I'm not saying we shouldn't have a sales tax. Having a sales tax on many items, I think, is a legitimate and constitutional function. That is something that can be done to raise revenue. But income tax, certainly not. That is something that I think is wrong. And many of the things that we do tax, even in terms of sales taxes, some of the things that we do tax are taxed excessively and are put out of business sometimes with excessive taxation. So Obviously, the whole direction when it comes to taxation should be changed. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to the great Ephraim ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you say a blessing for our fallen soldiers? Thank you, unquote. Absolutely. All brave, heroic soldiers who have given their lives fighting for freedom, for justice, for righteousness, fighting against Islamic terrorism and against monstrous forces in the world that want to do terrible things to innocent people. Those brave soldiers who willingly risk their lives to protect others certainly should be blessed. Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yevarech Otam V'Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yishmor Al Nishmotehem. God should bless them and God should guard over their souls. Absolutely. Thank you, Ephraim. One moment. Let me just check and see. Okay. And I really enjoy doing the program this week, as I always do. Until next week, Shalom.